The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning. This morning we have Dato' Yusli Yusof, the President of the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance, or MICG, and he's of course the former Chief Executive of Bursa Malaysia. Now, Dato', welcome back to the show. We've discussed, we've had discussions on the grill your tenure as Bursa Malaysia Chief Executive. Let's start with the CG landscape, and I think most recently this whole discussion with the dual class share structure. Of course, since been discarded by the stock exchange because of the potential, I guess, offences to the one club, one vote, one share rule, and of course the fact that it offers outsized advantages to family-run companies and company managers. But let's talk about the competitiveness of the stock exchange and why it is that, you know, maybe Bursa Malaysia had to even consider the fact that, you know, we had to offer dual-class share structures to the exchange.
I suppose if you look at the dual-class shares developments recently, I think it's more aimed at the new tech type companies, you know, the likes of the Googles, where the promoter founders need to be looking at longer term issues, and they don't want to be caught up with some of the more shorter term concerns that other shareholders might have. Now, if you look at what Google did in terms of even simple things like giving earnings guidance, you know, they took the step of not giving guidance because they wanted to focus more on the longer term instead of being caught up with the quarterly reporting focus, which can derail some of their plans for growing the business in the longer term.
Yeah, I guess that's an apt discussion for the Silicon Valleys of this world and the Nasdaqs of this world. But, you know, in Malaysia, we don't really necessarily attract as many, of this kind of pipeline, nor do we have a thicker pipeline of these tech companies. Or maybe it is that we're trying to attract them. And I guess related to this whole discussion about being more competitive from a stock exchange perspective, there was also this whole issue of Lotte Chemical, trumpeted at the time in the newspapers as being the biggest IPO since FGV in 2012, raising hundreds of millions of dollars. And I think, a little bit like FGV also fell flat in terms of its performance on debut day and subsequent weeks. It just kind of like offers a suggestion that Bursa Malaysia is losing competitiveness in attracting good, high-quality companies with strong defensible profit margins with an international perspective and profile. In the end, we turn up, we have companies like FGV and Lotte Chemical who don't, perform to expectations. Are we losing competitiveness, in other words?
Well, I think any market would want to see high-quality listings. And high-quality listings need to be the companies which are advertised or sold as high-quality listings need to perform as such. Basically, they need management and the board need to deliver on the promises made in the prospectuses, running up to the IPO. So I'm not sure. I don't think you can compare what happened with FGV with Lotte Chemicals. I'm sure the circumstances are very different, those two companies. But the basic message is the same. You need to have companies live up to the hype that was built up during the IPO, the pre-IPO. And if these companies don't deliver either the results or they don't walk the talk of whatever they're supposed to do, then the market will punish them.
Should the arrangers have been more circumspect in how they promoted the business? I think at some point in time, 2011, 2012, Hong Kong, offered a paper suggesting that arrangers should be made liable for promises made by issuing companies as their clients. So, I mean, this whole issue of banker liability remained moot until today, I think. But should that even be a discussion in Malaysia?
Well, I suppose it's always a willing buyer, willing seller situation when it comes to IPOs. Of course, on the one side, you've got the investment bankers trying to make sure that the IPO exercise is a success, and they will try and make it, they will try and paint the IPO to be as nice as they can, so long as they stay within the law. I mean, there is a law that requires them to be make sure that everything that's stated in the prospectus is true and fair and accurate. They're not allowed to make claims which are not supported by facts. So you would expect that at the end of the day, the investor has to be looking and studying the facts in the prospectus and making a decision. You know, a lot of times investors go in not reading the prospectus properly and then finding out that, you know, either, you know, they were expecting too much from the company, or they were just caught up in the whole thing and wanted to get the shares at any cost.
Well, talking about relying on documents, this whole issue of China list or China-based companies listed in Malaysia, we've got about a dozen and a half, maybe, of them, and quite a lot of them have, you know, have suffered in terms of their fortunes the last few years. And a lot of them, if not all of them, are trading at very, very low single-digit price-earnings ratios because of their performance. And I just want to circle on a couple of them. China Automobile Parts, for example, retracting their accounts from 2 years ago. Maxwell having declared something like 361 million ringgit in cash, but no revenue for the last three quarters, and having the accountants qualify their statements on whether or not this cash actually exists. Now, the issue here is Malaysia or should Malaysia take more action or more enforcement on companies such as this? And are they being maybe unnecessarily cognizant of the business that China does with Malaysia? And that is the reason why we don't clamp down maybe as much as we should.
Well, there's no room for compromise in this sort of things. I mean, the regulators have to make sure that the standards are maintained in terms of financial reporting, you know, in terms of disclosure by these listed companies. And the same standards apply, whether you are a local company or a foreign company. It's a shame to see this issue still persisting. I mean, I recall when I was at Exchange, we didn't have similar problems with China-based companies. And, you know, it's disappointing to see that it's still happening today.
So what is the MICG stance on this? I mean, I think you're an advocacy group, which, you know, does a lot of research and discussions and studies on this. But I think that's the extent of where your powers lie. I mean, correct us if we're wrong, but what should the regulators do about this from the MICG perspective?
From our perspective, CG is all about being transparent, you know. We want to see more ethical behaviour within the corporates, more accountability, and of course, in the longer term, the sustainability of those businesses.
Yeah, but it's one thing, you know, it's one thing disclosing your accounts and saying that you've got 316 million ringgit on your balance sheet, which is being completely transparent and saying how much cash you've got, but it's quite another not being able to back up this assertion without documentary evidence.
Yeah, but this is where we have the professionals such as the auditors. But even before that, we have the board of directors, right, who are responsible for what's stated in the accounts. I mean, the CG is all about setting the right tone at the top, and the tone at the top has to come from the board of directors. So if the board of directors is not able to make sure that their accounts that are being published are correct, then the tone from the top is totally wrong.
Well, then the gatekeepers should be assessed, isn't it? Because it's not just about board quality and board independence, but it's also about the auditors and the solicitors, as well as even the journalists and the media, to keep, you know.
Everybody has a role to play to make to keep everyone honest, you know. So the people that you select to go onto the board, I mean, that's why there's such an important need to have good independent directors. I mean, the new code talks about increasing the number of independent directors. But then again, you want to make sure that you get the right type of independent directors, directors who will stand up, you know, when they see something that's not right.
How do we prevent the practice where retiring civil servants from high positions in government are then offered directorships in usually GLCs or, you know, large corporates as quote unquote reward for their national service contributions? How should the CG landscape treat and evaluate developments like this?
Okay, then we go back then again to how directors are appointed onto boards. So the nominating committee has a very big role to play here. If you look at best CG practices, nominating committees may even hire headhunters to look for the best candidate, right? Before they select a new director. The criteria that is set by the company needs to be right in the first place. You know, today, unfortunately, a lot of directors get appointed via relationships. You know, you talked about GLCs and retiring civil servants. I mean, a lot of them are very good, you know, but then again, the process by which they are appointed, you know, is it done properly or is it done, is someone sort of assured a board seat based on his previous position in the civil service, which I think that would not be right, yeah?
Today at the Breakfast Grill, we are talking to Dato Yusli Yusof, the President of the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance, or MICG, and he's, of course, the former Chief Executive of Bursa Malaysia. After this, we're going to delve into your inaugural report on the 100 PLCs, as well as other mechanisms by which the market can be regulated.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Today on the grill, we welcome Dato Yusli Yusof, the President of the MICG, which is the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance, as well as being the former Chief Executive of Bursa Malaysia. Now, Dato, in terms of frontline mechanisms to regulate the market, Malaysia has the UMA, or the Unusual Market Activity, and the designations of certain stocks which have been trading in an untoward fashion. This whole issue of these mechanisms, they tend to be a bit toothless and they tend to be a bit outmoded, or they appear to be at least. I mean, citing a previous and recent case of Lei Hong, for example, they had unusual market activity in their share price, and even 2 weeks before the announcement of their corporate proposal, they said that they were unaware of any activity. And then subsequently, a fortnight later, announced that they were doing certain market developments like a bonus issue, share split, and a free warrant issue. It seems as if the market and the listed companies, they don't really adhere to or rate these mechanisms anymore. How would you respond?
Okay, when PLCs are engaged in such corporate activity, you know, there is always the need to maintain a certain level of confidentiality. But you know, inevitably, sometimes news does leak out. Now, it's very important that the PLCs react in the proper manner. Now, if there is something happening, there's a deal that they're working on, but it has not been finalized, then they should come up with a holding statement rather than say they're not aware of any developments, which is totally untrue, of course. You know, so in this regard, the PLC needs to be more transparent, and they need to get advisors who will advise them properly.
So from a regulatory standpoint, do you stand pat and say, okay, we'll give the market more time and the market participants more time to lift their game, or do you get a bit more tough? What do you think the landscape
should do? The regulator should take appropriate action. You know, if a PLC is clearly not telling the truth, then appropriate action should be taken against the board and the directors.
What kind of enforcement do you think should take place?
I think the regulators have their list of penalties available already. You know, it's not for me to say how they should be penalized, but certainly action should be taken. Otherwise, this sort of things will repeat.
Well, the thing is, when you analyze the penalties on individuals and companies, it's all over the last 5 years, the penalties seem to be stagnating or abating even. So it seems as if the regulator is taking a bit more of a softly approach rather than taking a bit of a hard hat approach. Is that a comfortable assumption to make?
Well, I think if the offence is serious, then the penalty should be serious as well.
Today on the grill, we are talking to Dato' Yusli Yusof, the President of the MICG, which is the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance, as well as being the former Chief Executive for Bursa Malaysia. Now, when we look at certain other developments on the stock exchange, for example, directors' remuneration, in fact, board quality, essentially, which is where the buck should stop in terms of any potential transgressions. It's all about the quality of the director. It's all about how well he or she is paid. And, you know, centering on a director's remuneration currently. Now, I understand that the current practice is to group certain bands of directors and their positions within certain remuneration ranges. The best practice suggestion should be individual director's remuneration with all other emoluments and benefits also described specifically as per each director. What is your stand on this issue?
Well, in the interest of transparency, then the full detail should be disclosed. I recall when I was at the exchange, we did disclose every single director's remuneration to the last ringgit.
Correct. That's Bursa Malaysia, though, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the current practice is. I think that was that wasn't the norm. No, most companies still feel uncomfortable doing that.
Why do you think that is? Because it should be matched to performance. I mean, when you look at companies like, say, I'm going to zero in on one example, okay, and this is basically Sapporo Energy. They were paid, their directors were being paid well over 3 million ringgit, all three of them, and without, you know, much justification for that, despite the fact that, you know, during the time, the energy sector was going through a lot of challenges. So it's one thing performing well for shareholders and not performing, you know, and conversely paying your directors as much money, if not more, in the current financial year. So from a best practice perspective, it's not really being played out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's important to be transparent so that the shareholders have a true picture of what's happening, and then they can raise issues at the, you know, at the company, whether it's at the AGM or even before that.
So, of course, you come to us today, Dato, as the president of the MICG, and of course, you are one of the foremost advocacy groups when it comes to corporate governance in the nation. What kind of messages? And we're going to get to your inaugural report on 100 PLCs in Malaysia in a minute. But what do you think advocacy groups like yourselves should, you know, in terms of enforcement, in terms of messaging to the landscape, what kind of things should evolve at this point in time?
You know, we've had a code of corporate governance going for a number of years now. The initial code came out in 2000. There's been three revisions, and the latest one was done earlier this year. I think there's still some ways to go in terms of best practice for corporate governance. Generally, the PLCs, are very well aware of the need for corporate governance, but there is a concern that it's still very much a box-ticking approach. So in form, everything looks good, but in substance, you know, the practices may not actually be an accurate reflection of what's being stated in the annual report. We have a particular concern about statements being made, like organizations like ACGA, when they published their report last year, they noted a big concern about falling standards of public governance in Malaysia, and that actually caused our ratings to fall in the ACGA report.
When you say public governance, what does that mean? Public listed companies or public sector, as in government institutions governance?
It's the overall governance in the country. That's what we mean when we say public governance. And of course, when you look at corporate governance exists within the overall framework of public governance. So I always tell people that, you know, you cannot expect very high corporate governance standards if the overall public governance standards, you know, are not that high. You know, it's like expecting, you know, you're having unrealistic expectations of, so you can't expect corporates to behave themselves if they look around them and they see that public governance standards are not high. Although we will continue pushing for higher corporate governance standards at MICG, no, we are not really in a position to influence or dictate how public governance standards are. We would want to see, I suppose one step we could take is to make sure that the public sector companies, which are not listed, are held up to the same kind of corporate governance standards that we expect our listed companies to aspire to or achieve. I always tell our constituents that, you know, if you look at public sector companies, we refer to them as public interest entities who are dealing wholly or exclusively with public money, then the standards of governance should be similar or better than what, for example, Bank Negara imposes on financial institutions in this country. And Bank Negara's corporate governance codes are seen to be the gold standard in this country. And they have policies or they have conditions like no politician should sit on the board. You know, we don't see that in the Code of Corporate Governance, which is applied to other corporates. But Bank Negara has this special condition. And, you know, this is to address issues like what you raised earlier about retired civil servants, for example. So I think for public interest enterprises, there is a need for them to be accountable and held to a higher standard than a normal private company.
Well, that's an accurate observation, because much as how the corporate sector can influence the public sector, the tail can't wag the dog. So in your opinion, should the governance and should the code not just be amended, because the code is just a best practice code, yeah? It's not enumerated in the legislation. So should legislation as well be amended to basically make it a legal obligation to do these things? Should we go that extra step, Dato, do you think?
Well, the regulator has a certain amount of power. I mean, the reason why the financial institutions in Malaysia comply to the letter to Bank Negara's Code of Corporate Governance is that the regulator doesn't really give them much choice. You know? So if all regulators take the same stance, then we should see corporate behavior improve. The problem is, apart from the listed companies who are regulated by Bursa and SC, you know, we have thousands and thousands of non-listed companies, and it's unclear who is regulating their behavior today. You know, if you look at the public interest enterprises, say for example those owned by Minister of Finance Inc., you know, who is actually regulating them?
Correct. Well, you know, I mean, obviously banks are regulated by Bank Negara, and Bank Negara does a fantastic job. And the SC and Bursa do a good back and front end job of regulating the capital market. But as you see, the SME sector, and the SME sector could be as much as 75% of the economy. These guys are by and large unregulated, as are the quasi-government companies. And they don't come any bigger than, say, an SRC International, for example, which deal with maybe hundreds of billions of dollars or ringgit in public monies. So what should change, Dato? And should the regulators take a much more proactive approach to this whole thing?
Well, at MICG, we are pushing for especially the larger public interest enterprises, the larger SMEs, you know, to be better regulated. I mean, today you got SMEs going after crowdfunding, for example, you know. So the need for better CG is important for any SME that wants to tap into this type of funds, you know. And for the public sector companies, I think there's no argument there. I mean, they just need to be better regulated, full stop.
Well, just on your inaugural Top 100 PLCs report in Malaysia, you had three basic themes, and one which is anti-corruption programs, the other one is organisational transparency, and the third was sustainability practices. On the whole, blended on average, Malaysian companies only scored 4.6 out of 10, which is, if you're on a kebangsaan school, it's a fail. Yeah?
Yep.
What should change?
Well, our report was based on another study done by TI, Transparency International Global, in 2016, where they studied the large emerging market multinationals. I mean, the only multinational that Malaysia had in that study was Petronas, and Petronas actually came out quite well. They came out in the top 10 after a few Indian multinationals. Our study indicates that in terms of what's being reported by our top 100 PLCs, the standards seem somewhat lacking, especially in areas like anti-corruption, in areas like human rights protection. I think our PLCs have not been putting enough emphasis, at least in terms of what they report to the public on these areas. It may be that they have the policies internally, but in our study, we couldn't see evidence, documented evidence from either the annual report or the websites or whatever public statements that have been made by the company in areas like anti-corruption and human rights protection, which met the expected standards.
Well, I guess hopefully by the time this time next year, when you come to us again with the second edition of your report, things will have changed. And so good luck with the remit going forward. And we hope you'll be having good news 12 months from now. So thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Yusli Yusof, the President of the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance, or MICG, as well as being the former Chief Executive of Bursa Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.